So do you know how many people are in functional freeze and don't even know it? I used to be one of those people, shit shows, deep in a functional freeze hellhole for 18 months. What this looked like for me was constant procrastination, glued to my phone, spinning out of my head anytime I tried to get work done, overthinking everything, and then every night drowning in shame for not doing the things I swore I was going to do that day. Functional freeze doesn't always look like shutdown. It can also look like you're crushing it at work, keeping up appearances, doing things all day, but inside, you're completely numb, exhausted, disconnected from joy, from desire, from yourself. That's freeze. That's not a flaw. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode. And the thing that helped me finally start to thaw out and feel alive again, somatic healing, breath work. Not just talking about it, not just mindset work, but actually getting into my body and giving my nervous system what it needed to feel safe. Which is why I'm so damn excited to tell you about this new 6-week somatic breathwork course, Breathe to Heal, led by a fellow shit show member, Teresa, who is a certified somatic and breathwork practitioner. So each week you'll experience live breathwork sessions, somatic integration practices, and nervous system education that meets you where you are. And here's the best part, folks. This is a fraction of the cost of most somatic healing programs out there. Like, this is a steal. So this starts on Wednesday, May 14th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. This will be on Zoom. You can head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is breathe with an E at the end, B-R-E-A-T-H-E. adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal to get your spot. Your nervous system has been waiting for this. Don't leave it hanging. If trauma can be inherited from one generation to the next, then so can love, emotional intelligence, and wisdom. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. What you're holding on to, just let it all go. What's making you slow now, just let it all go. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am the captain of this hot mess of a ship. And this is where we talk about what to do when you realize your childhood screwed you up a whole hell of a lot more than you initially thought that it did. For me personally, you know, I spent many, many years in denial, minimizing the impact that my childhood had on me. Now, there was never a shadow of a doubt that it was less than ideal, that it was dysfunctional. But, you know, I thought, well, I can talk about what happened to me without getting upset, or it wasn't that bad. Others had it way worse than I did. Or, you know, I've been sober for X amount of years and I've worked the 12 steps. I should be good, right? It couldn't have impacted me that much. Well, it turns out that it impacted me a whole hell of a lot, folks. It turns out it actually was trauma. Never once had I considered that what I experienced was trauma. I thought trauma had to be big catastrophic events, going to war, or being assaulted. I had no idea that what I had endured was trauma, and that this unresolved trauma was the root cause to so many of the issues that I was encountering in my life as an adult. And truly, I am so grateful that I figured that out, and so should you if you figured this out, because so many people will spend their entire lives never putting the pieces together, never realizing that that is the dealio. So welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship. Buckle up. We curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. And before we talk about today's interview, I have something that I'm actually really excited to share with you because I think this is going to be extremely helpful for many. So listen up. Perk those ears up, baby. So when I started this podcast 4 years ago, and we just passed the 4 years, we just hit the 4-year mark on March 31st. So I had been on this adult child healing journey for a little over 3 years, 3 years of going to therapy, 3 years of working on my childhood wounds. And then if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that it was about 2 years ago that a series of events occurred that triggered my abandonment trauma, this abandonment trauma that I felt pretty good that I had worked through, that completely
knocked me on my ass and put me into survival mode. And I basically lived in a trauma response for the next 18 months. And what I really didn't understand until the tail end of this most recent dark night of the soul was that I was actually in a state of functional freeze. And I want to talk about functional freeze for a second and what this actually looks like, because it's sneaky. And there are many of you listening right now that are deep in it without even realizing it. Because here's the deal. It doesn't always look like lying in bed all day or feeling totally shut down, although it can. But more often, it looks like you are going through the motions of life while feeling completely numb inside while doing it. You're doing the things, you're functioning. You might even be killing it at work, but everything feels like it takes twice the amount of energy that it should. You feel exhausted no matter how much sleep you get. You're disconnected from joy, from desire, from your own body. It can look like laziness, but it's not. It can look like procrastination, but it's not. It can look like self-sabotage or a total lack of motivation, but what is really going on is your nervous system is stuck in shutdown. You're not lazy. Your body thinks it's not safe to take action. So it just freezes. It conserves energy. It dissociates. And you beat the shit out of yourself thinking, what the hell is wrong with me? I know, because that was me. So functional freeze is when you're surviving, but you're not living. You're numb. You're disconnected. And the worst part is that you've been in it for so long that you think it's just your personality. It's not. It's a trauma response. And what finally helped me shift, what finally helped me start to be me again, was somatic work, breath work, nervous system education. You know, trauma stored in the body needs to be released through the body. And I had been doing so much head up healing, but my body was still keeping the score. And so that is why I'm so excited to tell you about Breathe to Heal, a 6-week journey of somatic release, which is a course, a series of workshops that I'm hosting that is being facilitated by Teresa, who is one of our very own Shit Show members, who also happens to be a certified somatic and breathwork practitioner. So if you've never done the body-based part of your trauma work, this is the place to start. If you're in that functional freeze and you don't know how to break out of it, this is the place to start. This is safe. This is live. This is not polished or performative. This is come as you are, cry on camera if you need to, exhale the shit out kind of healing, okay? So it will be every Wednesday for 6 weeks, starting on May 14th. This will be on Zoom, and there are two different pricing options going on, including one that gives you full access to the Shit Show community throughout the duration of the course. So I am so excited for this, because this is with a skilled healing practitioner who also happens to be one of us. So I know that this is going to be such a safe container for some powerful healing to happen. And this is going to be a limited capacity because I want to keep this intimate. So head on over to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal, adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal, to get your spot or learn more. You'll find all the details on that website. You can also go down to the show notes to find the link there as well. And I'm just so excited and grateful that Teresa wants to do this, has offered to do this. And I'm telling you, this somatic work, this somatic piece, it's non-negotiable, folks. It is non-negotiable. So today we are going back to Adult Child episode number 68 with psychotherapist and Reiki healer Blair O'Hara, who specializes in healing inherited generational trauma. He has such a fascinating story, not to mention he's Australian, so he's great to listen to, right? Am I right? But he has such an interesting personal story as it relates to generational trauma, epigenetics. We were talking about epigenetics last night in our Shit Show book club. He studied under Mark Wolin. We talk about family tree psychotherapy, which is fascinating. We talk about how unresolved trauma manifests as physical pain. This is a damn good conversation. So let's just get on with the damn show, okay? But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show, my online support community, where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups where we have at least 6 weeklies, where we have at least 6 groups per week, where you can connect with me, with Teresa, our upcoming breathwork practitioner, and so many other rad people that are doing the damn work to heal for less than $1 a day, okay? This is a support system at your fingertips through our app. This is the place to be, okay? So head on over to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow to damn the join already. And I just want to say this, if you're new and you've been wondering, why does she say damn the join? I said damn the join one time instead of join the damn. And it's just been damn the join ever since, okay? So damn the join shit show. You, yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for her. How about today's the day, okay? Just do it now. Next, give me a little follow on Insta, on TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. All right, shit show ladies. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Today, we are diving deep into inherited trauma with Blair O'Hara. He is a counselor, he is a psychotherapist, he is a Reiki healer who specializes in inherited generational trauma. So he studied underneath Mark Wolin, who is basically the inherited trauma guru. I had him on the pod. It was episode 16. Highly recommend that you go take a listen to that one after this episode if you have not. So Blair, in addition to sharing his professional experience, his tips, his tools, he will also be sharing his own raw and vulnerable journey, which, as you know, is a requirement around here. So he discovered that he was suffering from generational trauma in his 30s, and it surfaced psychosomatically. And it was a few years before he figured out what the hell was going on with him. So you will be hearing all about that. And this is really a fascinating conversation. So in preparation for this episode, so I am currently at my parents' house in Florida. So I was going through the closet that has all the old photo books and mementos. I don't know if that's the right word. Memorabilia is not the right word. Antidotes. I don't think that's the right word either. I'll go with mementos of, you know, from grandparents and just all the old pictures, just seeing what I could find in there. You know, is there any generational trauma clues in there? Well, I did not find any generational trauma clues. I did, however, find some of my old report cards, and boy, was this interesting. So I found first and second grade report cards. Now, first grade, nothing of note. Andrea is a good student. Here I am again talking to the third person, but nothing of note in my first grade report cards. Second grade is a different story. So second grade was the year that I found out that my mom was an alcoholic. So first I'm going to read you, this is the mid-year. So this was January 1997. My teacher's name was Mrs. Weissite, who actually, she was Australian, which is interesting because as you'll hear, Blair is Australian. Okay, so she goes through the all the academic stuff and I'm doing well. And so this is the final paragraph. Socially, this year has had its ups and downs. Because Andrea is tall and sometimes speaks and behaves in a way which belies her age and second grade status, it is easy to expect too much of her. The problems at the beginning of the year were not atypical of this grade, and Andrea has made real effort to solve them. She appears to understand herself quite well, that is, to have good interpersonal skills, which help enormously when she or anyone is dealing with interpersonal situations. We will continue as a class to work on social skills, friendship issues, and inclusivity in the school family, and I am sure we will see Andrea grow in this area because she shows a real desire to do so. Well, let's go to the end of the year one. It doesn't sound like Andrea was growing too much. So now this is June 1997. Unfortunately, it has been a difficult year for Andrea socially. While Andrea has a lot to offer a friend, she appears to enjoy controlling friendships and has almost an adult way of expressing herself at times with her peers. Sarcasm and bossiness tend to be alienating, and Andrea is prone to exhibiting both. Because Andrea is so motivated, it might be that she is creating stress for herself, and this is leading her to inappropriate behaviors with other children. Perhaps, too, each incident lessens her self-confidence in the social arena and leads to further missteps. I have given a lot of thought to this problem, and I would like to recommend that Andrea talk to someone like Dan O'Neill of Clearings over the summer and into the new school year. Andrea may need some strategies with which she could initiate or deepen friendships, as well as some understanding of her own behavior. It might also help her to get some assistance in dealing with her height, which is a difference for a child her age. And considering her outburst to me the other day about being considered a bully because she is tall, it may be that this is causing her some distress. I would like to see Andrea more comfortable socially and able to blossom even more academically. This is really trip for me to read that. As I've shared before, and if you guys don't know, I was really fucking tall. Like I have back in San Francisco, I actually have my class picture from the second grade, and I was as tall as this teacher was in the second grade. But so yeah, a few thoughts. So I've shared before that, you know, when I found out that my mom was an alcoholic, that it felt like I went to bed that night and I woke up the next morning feeling as if I had skipped like several stages of development and became an adult. And so I think that that's really interesting and in how both of them, she refers to me acting like an adult and treating my peers in an adult-like manner. So I thought that that was absolutely fascinating. I thought it was fascinating that she talked about being controlling because clearly I felt so out of control at home. But yeah, so I read this to my mom, and she did not really provide any insight or clarity on anything. I remember not liking this teacher. I don't really remember this year being a tough year for me socially. I thought that that was interesting that I had an outburst at her. What did she say? That I, considering her outburst to me the other day about being considered a bully because she is tall. I'm not quite sure what she means by that. If I was saying that she was telling me that I was a bully and I was telling her, you just think I'm a bully because I'm tall. I don't know. But yeah, so this is kind of like the sign. This is me kind of first showing some signs of distress, right? That there's traumatic shit going on at home. And then it would be the following year that I would start with the separation anxiety stuff. I believe it was in the third grade was when I woke up in the middle of the night in a total panic. And then that started the cycle of me sleeping in my mom's bed every night. And then I don't think it was until the following year, fourth grade, was when I finally went to a therapist for the first time. So I just thought I'd share that. Well, today we are joined by, so typically I announce everyone as a shit show. I don't know if you're a shit show yet, but we'll figure out as we chat longer. I feel pretty confident that you probably are a recovering shit show, but we'll find out. So we are with Blair O'Hara, and he is a psychotherapist joining us from Australia. So we're in two different days right now. Welcome.
True. Thanks, Andrea. Yeah, great to be on the podcast and great to meet you. And yeah, look forward to chatting with you more.
So did you have a bottom? Like, when did you realize that you were suffering from trauma?
Yeah, so the thing that really broke me apart emotionally, mentally, in all the ways, physically, psychosomatically, was getting divorced, right? So, and really it was the separation that I know this sounds like an everyday thing, but for me, and I'll explain where I got to with it all, was it was just shattering. It was really, really hard to take. And so that began my journey to understand emotions.
How long ago was that?
7 years ago.
Okay. And did you want to stay married?
Yeah, I wanted to stay married, two children. And the family unit to me was like sacred, right? And just that kind of breaking up of that family unit just was so hard for me to deal with. And now I work in family systems and family trauma and all that stuff. So for me, that was definitely, I've had, you know, my 20s and 30s was consecutive. You know, I was probably a lost child. Mm-hmm. In terms of my purpose, what I was meant to be doing, making mistake after mistake after mistake, to trying to do the right thing, but always kind of finding a way for it to go wrong.
Was there an element of self-sabotage?
Not consciously, but I feel like, I know this, you know, I'm a bit, you know, a science kind of based person, but I do think that I had a purpose that I was meant to be living, which is what I'm doing now, that I had to get beaten down by life, circumstances, universe, God, however you want to put it, to get me onto this path. Like, I had to suffer and just go through several incarnations in the same lifetime. We'll talk about other lifetimes, inherited stuff, I'm sure, but I just had to get everything taken away from me that I thought was important before I actually had a chance to put myself back together. It was really like a Humpty Dumpty moment, but that separation, when that happened, that was my Humpty Dumpty moment, where it just, I don't know if you know what that means.
Yeah, I know. I know who Humpty Dumpty is.
Okay. I thought there might be like an Australian American Lost in Translation thing, but no. So, but that was where it all fell apart. I had to kind of start again, really.
And so what did that look like?
So those years, it was like everything started to fall apart. So my car was falling apart, my job, my career path was falling apart, the marriage fell apart, my health fell apart, my physical fitness fell apart. So it was just like, you know, some business kind of things that I'd started just fell apart. And it was like everything conspired against me over like a 2-year period. It was just like everything that could go wrong would go wrong. You know, money, like just investment, everything that could have gone wrong basically did. For a period of about 3 months, it was like a walking coma, I called it, because I couldn't function. I get to work, I was still working, and I couldn't concentrate. I could not concentrate. I had to talk to people. I had to distract myself. I just found it so hard to function. Like, but I had to hang in there because, you know, I still had time with the kids. I still had to do that. I still had a job. Like, I couldn't afford to lose my job at that point. So I really just had to kind of hang in there. And luckily, I built up a bit of, you know, credit at work. So I had, you know, I could kind of fudge around a little bit, but it was only because I couldn't think. Like, my brain just went into like a shutdown state, and I was just overwhelmed and lost. And yeah, so I was just really stuck. Like it was just a nightmare. It was really a nightmare. But only because, like, I was a very shut down person.
Yeah, emotionally. Yeah.
Mm.
So what were you taught about emotions growing up?
I wasn't. Zero. Yeah, zero modeling of emotions, zero, you know, not. I think my parents did their best job they could, and they were, for all intents and purposes, okay and good. But, you know, emotions weren't, just, it just wasn't on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Were you taught that you weren't, was it just kind of ignored, or were you given messages that certain emotions weren't okay?
They were just suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Just suppressed and ignored and dismissed.
Mm-hmm. So when you're going through this, you know, barely functioning, what is your understanding of what's going on with you? Do you think I'm just having a hard time, that you're going to pull yourself out of this? I mean, did you think that this is life as you know it? Like, were you suicidal?
I don't know if I was suicidal, but I was, you know, to an actionable state, but I, you know, there was a lot of despair and wondering, you know, when this was going to end, because there were two things that were going wrong kind of physically. One was this horrible brain fog. Like, I could not, it was like my head was like so heavy. And then I had this, I developed this pain in my stomach that was like a headache, but it was right in my stomach. Mm. So it was like I woke up and it hurt, and it, until I went to sleep that night, it would hurt. So it was like all day pain. And then this chronic brain fog. So I was just trying to work out, how do I stop this from hurting? Like, how can I stop this from hurting?
The physical pain.
And it was, you know, entirely linked to emotions, like psychosomatic emotion, you know, connection. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand any of that. All I knew was I can't think straight, and I've got this pain in my stomach all the time.
So then when was the aha?
The aha came a lot later. So from there, it was just kind of trying to
survive.
Yeah. Just kind of get through the day, try not for anything else to go wrong, right? Just to kind of hold the pieces that were okay together. And, you know, I can hide emotions really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can put on a brave face really well. So, and I haven't liked sharing too much. So my mission was I need to figure this out as much on my own as I can.
Yeah. And not let anybody know that you're suffering.
As much as possible, yeah. So I just tried anything and everything.
Doctors, I'm assuming, were you seeking medical attention for the stomach issues?
You know what? I kind of avoided GPs because I'd actually, you know, for the most part, I've been relatively healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I just didn't think I was going to get the right answer there. So I was trying like things like I would go for a coffee and then I'd see a shop and I'd walk in and be like, okay, so what's kinesiology? You know, let's try that, you know, and you know, so I'd try that. And then, you know, after separation, I did get on kind of the dating apps way too quickly. And then I quickly realized I did make one great friend out of it, actually. She was still a friend now and really helpful. But
you got any good, juicy, awful date stories do you share?
Oh, well, just the one like we talked about before, like, you know, the one person when I got there, I actually didn't recognize the person. I completely walked past her and I was like, is that this? And then so, you know, it was a waste of time. And, you know, she was lovely, you know, like otherwise a nice person, but didn't. And I was like, this is actually a recipe for disaster if I keep doing this. So, you know, besides meeting the friend that became a really good friend, that was kind of
a shit show.
It was a shit show. But what happened a couple of years? So this pain in my stomach just never went away. So this is now years later since the separation. So it's like a year and a half's gone by and I'm still trying to deal with it. So, you know, you know, even drinking or like having a beer or wine or like it didn't really affect it. So that wasn't helping either, right? Even if, you know, had a lot, you know, a big night, mm-hmm. it was still there. I'd go to bed and it wasn't like that helped. So that wasn't really, you know, you still enjoy the night, whatever, but wasn't helping. And then, you know, long story short, I did get back on the dating app and the woman I actually saw for a few months she started doing yoga. And long story short, we broke up and when after we broke up, I had time on my hands. I was like, you know what, I'm going to try some yoga. And this wasn't my thing. I still can't touch my toes. Like it's not my jam, really, flexibility. And anyway, so I tried it. And what was good about it was, you know, it did offer some physical release, but it actually connected me into, like, you know, I got to meet people that way actually. Mm-hmm. And then I'd start talking to other people. And then out of the yoga came, you know, contact who was doing like Reiki and stuff like that. And I didn't know what Reiki was. And also led me into like a men's group that kind of helped me kind of sit around and, you know, chew the fat with other guys who were having hard times and things. And so then it started, some momentum started to build in the right direction, because now I was connecting with people that were
healthy,
trying to help others or like
seeking help for themselves on a journey of self-improvement.
100%. Yeah, exactly. So, and then, you know, we started doing ice baths and meditation and breath work and, you know, more of the, so all those practices actually started to come together. And my Reiki person is a dear friend of mine, and that was actually really helpful. So the stuff in the stomach really started to shift when I had this Reiki. And I didn't know what, have you had Reiki done?
No, I have not.
So Reiki is traditionally a really either hands off. So yep. I've learned this since then, but it's hands off or just really gentle pressure. So what would happen is you put an eye pillow on, you're lying down. I'm sure people have done it who are listening, and my practitioner's hands off for the most part. So you're kind of like sitting on a treatment table for an hour. It's comfortable and there's music and it smells nice and everything, but you're like, is anything actually happening? Because it's not like
there's no talking.
No talking, right? So you could, but generally not. And so it's not like physio or chiro where like they're playing with your body. You're doing this. So half an hour goes by, I walk out and I'm feeling like I'm floating on clouds. I'm like, what is just happening? Because nothing really happened, but it feels good. So now I'm onto the I'm moving out of like the pain and into what starts to feel good. You know, this is close to 2 years since the separation, right? So it's been a long, long time.
Was there any like pre-work as far as before you did that initial session? I mean, obviously this is somebody that I guess you knew, but I mean, was there any backstory? Like, did they know that you were having stomach issues or anything?
No.
Is that typically how Reiki's done, or is there typically some sort of like assessment done beforehand?
Oh, we talked, like we had a, like there's a talking part and then there's a, like a, like okay. a practical part. So we talked, but the thing with Reiki is, so I've learned Reiki as well, is like you get attunement in the hands. So when you're hovering your hands over someone's body, you get there's feeling, like you get feeling in the hands, and based on where the feeling turns up, you can tell what's going on for them. So I had a lot of tension in the belly, like huge amounts of trapped tension in there, and so what the Reiki offers is basically just an outlet for release. So you're providing a channel for the trapped energy and emotion to flow out, because emotions are meant to move, right?
I'm sure it's different for everyone, but for you, like now that you are a Reiki practitioner, what does it feel like for you specifically when you are sensing like trapped energy? Does it vary? Is it always the same feeling? Is it like a heat, tingling, numbness? What is it?
Yeah, all of the above, right? So the most acute, I haven't done a lot of Reiki practice. I'm more, you know, psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. But the most acute was I was doing it on a woman, and I went over her knee, right? And it was like you're getting kind of like heat and then someone like pinching the skin of your hand. Like it was really tangible, mm-hmm. right? It was hot and it was tight. And then I'm like, what's up with your knee? And she had a surgery like a couple of days. So it's not, you have to ask the person what's happening, but it's like there is a radiance from the body about what's going on for the body. So you can feel numb, you can feel tight, you can feel hot, you can feel cold. It's just, it's really interesting actually, but you have to kind of just play with it. And if you did Reiki all the time, then you would be more able to kind of tell what's going on for people.
Yeah,
but I just did it for my own benefit and some practice. But it is, I do find it like out of all the modalities that I tried, because I tried lots and lots, that was and continues to be, you know, when I get it done from time to time, just really releasing. It just helps the emotions move when they have a tendency, like me as a chronic suppressor, to get them moving, right?
So then what do you think with this lady with the knee? She had just had like some sort of an operation, but like, was there more of a backstory there, or did anything else come out of that? Was there's mm-hmm. emotional element to it?
Yes. Great question. So I work, you know, psychosomatically with people in psychotherapy as well. Right. So what happens with trapped emotions is it is like an energy. And it depends what the emotion wants to do. Does it need to express itself, right? Which means it's going to be more hot, more strong, more tight. Like for me, I had a knot, right? I had a knot, which meant it didn't actually want to move. Right? It didn't want to move. And that's why it stayed there for so long. But then some things like numbness, they want to stay buried. So grief, if you're suffering from grief or loss, then you're most likely to feel numb. Like you'll feel sad, but under the sadness there's a numbness. So when you're asking someone to feel into their body, then they feel numb. They actually don't feel much of anything. Right, so it just depends. Yeah, it just depends. And the body can feel, can we could go on a little bit of a tangent here, because I think
that's what I like to do.
So when I do the family systems work with people, yep. I look at, you know, parent dynamics.
Were you trained by Mark Lewin?
Yeah, Mark Lewin.
Yeah, I've had him on.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cool. Yeah, Mark's amazing. And he's really inspired a lot of family constellations based practitioners. Like I know a few One's in, I think, New York and Paris and Mexico and here and so on. So, yeah, great mentor as well as a...
He's a super solid guy. I love talking with him. Is he working on another book? I think he is.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about that is, you know, because we look at parents, we look at grandparents, we look at great-grandparents, mm-hmm. sometimes beyond that, but not usually. Mm-hmm. And so part of that method is to actually have the person stand in for, and when I say stand in, it's like if you had to map out your family tree, mm-hmm. And here's dad on, and then the grandfather and grandma and great-grandma. So what we do is get people to stand in the place of a person. So mm-hmm. let's just say you go and stand in for your grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. The body will feel different things based on who you're standing in for, right? So I'll give you an example of a guy I worked with a couple of years ago. So I said, you know, go stand in for grandpa, and his body felt really hot, like immediately hot, and he wasn't hot before, right? And then he felt like some feelings in the legs, which weren't all that stable, right? So now you're looking at, you know, there's a lot of things to connect it to, I won't give you the whole story. But then I said, okay, stand in grandma, literally about 2 minutes later, and his body immediately went cold, right? So he's gone from not feeling normal to hot to cold. And basically the body is holding, like, is able to hold all these kind of physical sensations, emotions, and when you kind of draw upon them through, you know, family connections, then they start to come out. So what that means is if we're trying to explore what's going on for someone emotionally, mentally, well, we have to explore, well, where could this have come from in the beginning? Like, mm-hmm. where did it originate from? Because often, and that's the title of Mark's book, it didn't start with you, right? Yeah. So if we can work out where it began, then we can help release it for an individual person living now, right? Because almost all of us are carrying something from the past, some legacy burden, mm-hmm. you know, that's come out of war, famines, you know,
poverty,
yeah, stuff, you know, bad, you know the shit show of humanity, right?
Bad first dates, you know.
right, yeah, well, you know, all good ones, you know. There's a lot of grief that comes out of having lost a lost love.
Yeah, loved and lost. Yeah.
A lot of stuff. And mm-hmm. you know, in those war times when, you know, you'd have this young relationship, mm-hmm. you know, guy goes to fight, dies, you know, it's very hard to recover from that. You know, and people move on and they remarry and stuff, but there's always this grief. The grief kind of just lingers for a gaping hole.
Mm. Yeah. So I don't know if you're in the process of doing this, but so what were you able to find out about that particular guy with the being hot with his grandma and cold, or hot with grandfather and cold with grandma? Did you
What was interesting with him was he was adopted at birth.
Uh-huh.
And so what we were doing was reconciling like his birth dynamics. Like, uh-huh. So he never got to meet his mom, he did make contact with his dad, but he didn't know anything about his grandparents. And so what we're doing is trying to get a sense of what he's carrying on, what he's holding on to that's come through from the side of the family, like his biological family that he didn't know. So what happens when you release it is actually you just feel better within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You actually get to have a sense of who you are as an individual, separated from, you know, what the beliefs were of your family, the patterns of your family. You just get to be yourself a little bit more than you have before. You know yourself better. You just can move on with things. You develop more resilience because when you're holding on to things from the past, they're taxing, they're energetically tiring. So when you release those, it's almost like you get that energy back and you can do with it what you want. The thing that I noticed when I've worked with people for a long time is vitality, right? So they got on the first call and they're crying and their face is kind of gray and Like it's the, you can see the sorrow, whatever's going on. And then, you know, a few months later, you can see the energy in their face, like the vitality in their eyes. Like you can, it's really, because everything I do is on Zoom for the most part. But even on Zoom, you can see the vitality returning to their body. It's really, really nice.
So this guy was adopted. Let's say somebody has no idea who even their their blood grandparents were. Like, what if they don't even have a name? Could you still do that work? Would you still do that work?
Oh yeah, all the time, all the time. So let me connect my story and why that separation hurt me so much. So in my own research, and I didn't know this before, but I had a great grandfather fight in World War One. So he was an Irish guy. He moved to London. He had four kids, one of which was my grandfather. And then when war broke out in 1914, he was 37, right? And he was one of the first guys to go over to Europe and fight in the First World War, mm-hmm. okay? 80-something days into the war, he gets captured. He didn't die. I've done the history. It's like brutal. It's a miracle he actually lived. But he got captured and was sent to Germany to be a prisoner of war for 3 and almost 4 years. So the rest of the war, 1918, he gets out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what my parallels were was I got separated at 38. He got separated from his family at 37.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're a prisoner of war, like, what are the emotions that you feel? You feel helpless. You're away from your family. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing you can do. You're defeated. Like you're scared, right? You don't know what the future's going to hold, right? So all of that and like emotion that he was experienced, I feel like carried through to me. So when my marriage ended and I got separate, I felt helpless. I felt like a failure. I felt like I didn't know where the future was going to come, what was happening next. I was broken up from my family. Different circumstances. I'm not running through a battlefield, but the emotions were still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when I realized that, I was like, holy shit, like, I feel like I'm holding on to his trauma. And it's just played out in my lifetime in the way that. And this is why I feel like all of those events that transpired for 2 years, just like all the bad things that happened, had to bring me to that point where I was now responsible for healing his wounds, as well as my grandfather. What my grandfather couldn't deal with it, my dad definitely couldn't deal with it, and then it was my turn, right? And it's either going to break me or it's going to like turn me around.
I guess what my question was, so then you were able to, I want to hear how you ended up figuring this part out. You were able to do some research and find this information out. But like, what I'm saying is like, can it still be done for somebody that they don't have any of the information?
Yeah. Yeah. And we do this through the feelings, like the physical sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Mark would say, like, I learned this from Mark actually, that it sometimes helps not to have a story because it can be more authentic for you. Because at the end of the day, what an individual is trying to take on is healing their stuff.
Yep.
Right. So you feel certain things, like I feel grief or I feel anxiety or I feel anger or rage or whatever it might be. And I've got to deal with those emotions. So what we do in therapy is we map out the family tree psychosomatically, right? So what we do is we start with an individual. So we map out your feelings. So where, let's just say I'm feeling numb in the heart, right? And I feel I've got this knot in my stomach, right? So they're the two the two key indicators of what's affecting me. So then when we do the work, it's like we have to prepare. But once we start to do it, it's like, okay, let's go stand in for dad.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel when you're standing in for dad? Oh, I feel I get a headache and not much else. Okay, so that's that. We've mapped that out. Okay, let's go stand in for mum. You know, I feel funny in my feet and I get a little bit of this numbness in the heart. You're like, okay, let's go do grandma. Let's stand in for grandma, right? And then it's like, oh, I've got this numbing in my heart and I've got a knot in my stomach. So I was like, okay, hang on. So what you're saying is when you're standing for grandma, you're feeling the same things that you're feeling in your body, in your own life, like the way you feel it. Yeah. So now we've got a bit of a match, right? So you don't have to know grandma to get this kind of overlap of physical sensations, right?
And then it's about just feeling into those emotions. It's just feeling it, sitting with it.
Yeah. You know, we work with some healing language, mm-hmm. and we try and bring peace to that person's experience. Mm-hmm. So then if we feel like, you know, the trauma or the inherited pieces come through from grandma, then we look at who's around grandma. So we do the same work as if we are working on behalf of grandma and bring peace into her body. So then it brings peace into ours.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I know it sounds a little bit out there.
No, not at all.
Really kind of, you just trust the way the body gives you the feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one story of Mark's about the girl who was cutting herself and then her grandma had died of that car accident. That was crazy.
Yeah. So people say things. So just on that. So Mark, like, you know, his method's brilliant about the core language.
Yeah.
So in that story, he's like, when he's in the session with the young girl, he said, right before you cut, what do you say? What are you hearing in your head? And she said something like,
I think it was something about like not deserving. I don't deserve to live or something like that.
And it's like, hang on, those words don't apply to her lifetime because you know, your parents are fine. But here she is and she's saying these words. So I've had people say things to me that, you know, you're saying, well, what's the problem? And they say things that don't apply to their life story. So then you're actually saying words that came through from somebody else that have just, and they come through different languages. So if you've got a grandparent that's, let's just say French, and you don't speak French, right? Her words, whatever they may be in French, can turn up in English in your own voice, right? So I've got some really interesting. So as soon as you ask certain questions, and they give you that kind of feedback. Like some people say, you know, I'm going to be ripped in two, right? And you're like, hang on, what do you mean you're going to be ripped in two? You know, and then you discover that, you know, there's been some birth trauma or they've had, you know, something where a part of them has felt like it's been removed, but they, you know, it's doesn't relate to their lifetime. You know, it's got to do with something else. So that language element, you know, gives you a lot of clues to past trauma as well.
So then tell me about how you went from Reiki to discovering this shit out.
Yeah, good question. So here's another weird thing that happened to me in this process was I was doing some journaling. It was kind of like guided meditation journaling. And it was about feeling things in the body. And I wrote down, so this is before I did the research, but I'd written down my pain is related to three generations ago. It's related to war. It's related to alcoholic parents. And it's related to not being able to speak the truth. And I'd written this down as a with pencil, and it had nothing. It meant nothing to me, right? And then 6 months later, so these are the words that are coming, that are there, but don't make sense. So then 6 months later, I jump on Ancestry. I'm like looking, and my dad didn't know this stuff. Like it's his grandfather, my great grandfather. And I found all these military records with this guy's life and prisoner of war. And the ironic thing, this kind of is a bit trippy, but I'll say it. So my ex-wife was German and he'd got trapped in a German prisoner of war camp. So I still think there's a connection there that me meeting her and blowing up is something to do with his experience too, but that's for another day. But basically when I'd worked out that this link came, like I reckon my pain was ancestral, then I started researching about ancestry, and that's how I found kind of the family constellations work. And
it's crazy that that, you know, channeled through you.
Was channeled, yeah, 100% channeled. And so I'd carried on with the yoga. I became a meditation teacher, did Reiki practitioner, and started counseling back then as well. But the thing that then brought it all together was doing Mark's training 3-4 years ago. And when I sat in there and I was doing that training, and I'd read his book, but only half of it, and I told him that, it was just like light bulbs, like every 15 minutes, just going, and that just put all, and basically there was a 3-day, 4-day kind of training, and I was vibrating. I was sitting there literally shaking. I'd walk out on a break and my body was releasing. It was just on nonstop release that whole time. And from there, it just, my whole world kind of came together. So like my modality that I work with professionally answered my personal questions, helped me bring a lot of peace, you know, help me kind of put it all together. And then I've kind of, you know, built on this as well, like with other stuff. But yeah.
The training that you did, was that for people to be trained, you know, as a practitioner of this work, or was it like a workshop that you were doing it for yourself?
It was practitioner, but you do it for yourself as well. You can't not live it. And I've since done Peter Levine's somatic experiencing training, which is, you know, taking those feeling states and working through and unlocking that trapped trauma with those methods as well. So it's a really, really effective way of releasing from the body, because, you know, there's that other great book called, you know, Body Keeps the Score, which is about what we hold on to. And yeah, it's just fascinating. I could talk to you.
Was there anything else other than what you discovered about your grandfather, anything else in your own journey of doing this stuff with the family tree that was profound or interesting?
Well, it was just trying to understand what the body's trying to tell us, right? So that knot I had in the stomach, what I kind of worked out was that it's trying to tell me something. Like it's screaming at me for 2 years, just listen to me. It's almost like the knot's like, listen to me. You've gone through 35 years, 38 years of your life without listening. And now I'm going to, the only way you're going to pay attention is if I make it painful. So now instead of suppressing it, ignoring it, dismissing it, you've got to pay attention to it, right? And that's been the thing that's basically helped me navigate future stuff that comes up and challenges, is like, okay, I can't ignore it anymore. If I ignore my emotions, what's going to happen? It's going to hurt. It's going to go, hang on, you're forgetting me, you're not paying attention, but I'm just going to give you these pain so you can stop what you're doing and come and talk to me. Basically, that's what I think a lot of pain, you know,
I think it all is. Yeah. There's always a spiritual purpose behind it. And, you know, that's what my message of this podcast is not just to heal our unresolved shit, but to actually like view it as a blessing, you know, because it forces us to do that work, you know. And there's a lot of people out there that never get into enough pain to do anything about it. And I just so feel so grateful that I am someone that has experienced a fuckload of pain, you know, because I had to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, yeah, it's courageous stuff. And, you know, I meet a lot of people, you know, in that pain, they're in that pain place. And when you've got that pain, you know, like you and I just described, like, that's all you can think about. That's all your life becomes the pain. And you forget you've got good things going on as well. And like for people to deal with pain for years and years and years, you don't realize it, but you have to be strong, right? For you to just still turn up and live, you have to be strong, right? You have to have courage, right? You have to have a level of resilience, right? And those three things are awesome qualities. But we just have to kind of get this pain off our back, just get this just release these burdens so we can actually use that, these qualities for things we want to be doing, not just putting fires out and dealing with the crap. It's like, you know, and when you explain this to people, they're like, you know what? I actually do have a lot of strength. Maybe I do have a lot of courage, and that can kind of give them a little bit of a boost and help them see that there's a way out of this. There is a way out of this. And guess what? It's like, you know, Dorothy with the Wizard of Oz, like some of these things you've had all along, you just haven't realized it. And these are the things that are going to help you, you know, get out of this jam and actually make your life, you know, give it a real crack.
Through doing this work, did you also gain a new perspective on your childhood? I mean, you mentioned that there was no emotions, but was there anything else that you thought was normal, but was not really so normal?
Yeah. So my father had pretty massive mental health issues, and good question. Yeah. I mean, a lot of perspectives, but specific to childhood, I think it was, you know, I was never present either. Like I was always worried about the next thing. So when I read, you know, The Power of Now, like Eckhart Tolle, when I was like 38, I was like, holy shit, what is this idea of presence? Like I'd never thought about it in my whole life. Gone, the present moment? What the hell is that? And that was like massive. Like I'd always been past or future, never present, ever. My mind never was present. And I don't think I was prepared. Like, I don't think this is necessarily my parents' fault, because I don't think they could have, if I'd have asked them, they wouldn't necessarily have been able to tell me. But I don't think I was prepared for life, like adult life, like stuff. I just kind of went through the motions, did all the things, you know, find the girlfriend, marry, have the kids, have the house. Like I was just in the cookie cutter framework of what life should be like. No emotional presence. My school was very rigid. Emotions had no place in my school whatsoever. So it was just like this absence of context about what is really going on in life. Like it's an emotional experience more than anything else, a felt sense and an emotional experience. And that was never expressed and never explained, never, you know, just never put on the agenda. So when you walk into things like things that are distressing, like I didn't have any coping strategies at all. Like I would drink and I would run away from it. That was, I'm avoidant and suppressing. So never face it, because I didn't have the tools, like no ability, got no clue.
So through doing this work as well, for me, like on the surface, I thought I had pretty high self-esteem. You know, I thought I liked myself, but my actions clearly showed otherwise. And I had no clue that deep down, I believed that I was, you know, unlovable or inherently flawed. And so what were some of the kind of limiting beliefs that you discovered and have worked through? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, I had to achieve to be worthy of anything. I had to do good things. To be recognized and to be, you know, given attention. I had to like succeed in whatever it was. You know, I always felt like I had to give more than what I deserved, like in return. Like I always had to give to get, rather than just being open to receiving good things and other people's gratitude. It took me a long time to be able to receive a compliment without feeling super awkward. That was one that, you know, I'd almost like reject compliments out of hand. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it was almost like an insult when someone gave you something nice to say, even though I was still on the flip side, striving for recognition. But then when the recognition came, I wasn't able to hold it. So, yeah. And also I had to be something bigger than myself, just to be recognized and just to be loved, probably. I couldn't just be myself in whatever way that meant may have been to receive good things. I had to do something good to get good things back. I couldn't just be myself, right? I had to be something.
What were you doing for work before you were doing this stuff?
So I had a career in like the sports industry, actually. So I was a kind of commercial money-making kind of a guy.
What were you doing?
Well, I used to manage like sponsorships, like player management, business development kind of.
Like a sports agent?
I worked in a sports agency for a while, and then kind of community-based sports organizations.
So what was it, for rugby or soccer or what kind of professional?
Oh, no, our Australian football.
Okay.
Australian football, which is his own version. And I loved that. Yeah, I mean, I loved it to a point, and then it became completely meaningless work. It was a job and an industry people loved to be in. I got, free tickets to the footy. I'd get wine and dined. I'd get like free stuff all the time and, had the best seats in the stadiums kind of stuff. And, for a while it was just like the best because it was like a dream come true. And then after a few years, all of this work started coming through me, it just became so boring and meaningless. And it was like, oh God, this is just painfully stupid. And
I get it.
Yeah. So I just lost all motivation for it. And, the funny thing about that was I was transitioning into this, what I was doing now. And in my job, I'd like broken sales records and highest of this, highest of that, praised. But in the end, I was like managed out. Like I got political. And this was just another sign that I had to just shove off, get out of that. Whether or not I was ready for it at the time, I was probably a year away, but I just, accepted it and just took it as an opportunity. Like, okay, if you're not going to jump, we're going to push you. And so
the same exact thing happened for me. Like, I wish I could be one of those people that works hard no matter what, but I'm not. And so if I'm not into something, like, I'm a horrible employee, but yeah. So it was once I launched this, I already wasn't like super into my job, but even more so. And I, a horrible employee, and I didn't feel great about that. I just wasn't in a position. The podcast was, lucrative enough for me to have this be my job. And so I was waiting for that. And then I got fired. My boss, we had a meeting. He's like, this isn't working. And I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is not working. And it's not fair to them, me being such a shitty employee. And it's also not fair to myself. So it was that push off the ledge.
I think this happens a lot for people, actually. I think this is happening all the time. Is we're trying, whatever force it is, it's just nudging you into the place that you want to be. But because we're conditioned by culture, school, whatever expectations, we resist. But I think the universe, whatever it is working for us way more than against us.
100%.
And in my weird, wonderful brain, I kind of get intuitive thoughts that turn up. And when I was really fearful kind of years ago, I kept getting this thing like, you'll be supported, you'll be supported. And as I transitioned from that career to this one, weird things happen, which meant instead of because you're trying to build a practice and learn new things and make a living. And it was really actually terrifying. And I would just, the message just kept coming through, just you'll be supported, you'll be supported, you'll be supported. And that's exactly what's happened. And now I'm kind of sustainable and, going fine. And I could have easily taken a job, gone back into that old industry, got paid well. But I was like, thinking of going back actually made me physically sick. So I'm like, my body's telling me I'm going to vomit if I choose a decent job. Well, what's going on? I either have to trust it now or not. But when I trusted the previous thing, it just like it broke my life apart. So I'm just going to put faith in whatever's going on, keep stepping one step at a time. And it's true, it keeps getting better and better, but it was scary, like it's been scary.
It is. And
maybe foolish, but it's like, you know, it's one lifetime. Let's just wear it, let's wear the fear and push on and see what happens. Funny that the physical feedback that I think is the best sign for moving forward with something is like overall a sense of peace and calm, but with a little tinge of excitement. Like you don't want too much excitement because then you might be in your dopamine and going for your high. But I think if you've got like this calm sense, the body feels peaceful, and then you've got this little tinge of excitement that just wants to go. Mm-hmm. Those three things are the sign for me that I'm stepping in the right direction. Right. And
so you need to quote that shit. Have you made a video on that?
I haven't actually. No, I'm still just kind of cranking up my social media and everything. So, but I might take your inspiration and do a little reel about that one.
Yeah, better do it quick or I'll, before I make it.
You can use it. No, I'm happy to, I want people to, heal and, because all this stuff's really helpful. We need healers and we need people to have the clues to help themselves. And, if someone hears it and applies it and feels better, then everyone around them feels better and everyone around them feels better and a little bit better. And, I do kind of subscribe to the butterfly feeling. Like you may not feel like you're having much of an impact, but every little bit does help, right? And it radiates around the world. I don't know if you felt it like when COVID hit, like it was like there was this global anxiety. Like you could feel the tension just in the community, right? It was just like this sense of, oh, this is just shit, right? But when good things happen, like it's the opposite. So, spreading the healing messages is far and wide.
Well, everyone that listens to my podcast, and they should be really grateful for COVID. It allowed, I was working from home. You know what I mean? Like it allowed me to be able to do this shit and have my boss not realize I, don't work all day and I'm actually creating a podcast.
Perfect. Yeah.
So a couple of questions. So one, I saw one of your videos and you were talking about how before you attempt to work on the relationship with a parent or partner, work on the relationship you have with the feeling you have inside about the parent or the partner.
Yeah. 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 So if you think of a person who you have an emotional dynamic with, right? You'll feel different things for different people. So if you think of an ex-partner, the body will take it on different. If you think of mom or dad or brother or sister or whoever, and it's like your body feels different things for different people. Like the felt sense is different. So before you want to work on a relationship dynamic, whether it's, family or romantic, whatever, you've got to be able to reconcile, well, what does that feeling mean to me? All right, so let's just say, looking at an ex-partner and there's some resentment or some bitterness or something like that. And maybe it's justified, right? They've done something wrong and goes against your values. What has to happen first is a reconciliation of those feelings. So we have to come back to peace. We want to come back to not holding on to stuff that doesn't serve us. Right. So we've got that bitterness, let's just say. We hold the bitterness. Sometimes the other person doesn't care less. Like they've got their own stuff and we can't be them, we can't solve it for them. Right. So in that dynamic, there's this thing and it's creating this feeling within us. And if it's not good, we need to clear that first. And then so let's just say you want to have a reconnection with a partner or a parent or whoever. You want to turn up with clearness, like clear emotional slate within yourself. And then you can be present with them, because whatever's come, the history has created this feeling in the body. I don't like it. It feels yuck. All right, so I have to clear this. No one's going to clear this for me. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then whether or not you have a reconnection or you never see the person again, it doesn't matter. Like, you want to bring your body back into health. That's the most important thing to you or me, you know, for ourselves. And so, but what we are often trying to do in contrast is go, I need this person to do something for me so this feels better, right? And that person doesn't know how to do it and really can't do it or doesn't want to do it. And then we're stuck, right? So we can't get them to fix us. We've just got to clear it. And it's just emotional energy. It's not words. It's not what they said. It's not the way they behaved. It's just energy that's within us that needs to be processed.
Yeah, our shit.
Yeah, we need to just, you know, our shit, and it needs to just be flushed out.
That banana video, like that.
Oh yeah, the banana video. Yeah, that was my first reel. I was terrified to do reels.
Did you come up with that one on your own?
Yeah, because there's a fruit bowl just over there, and I was like, "What am I going to do? I'll just grab that banana," and in it goes as a video. There's some there right now. You got another one.
I love it. You inspired by fruit.
I haven't done any more. I haven't done any more banana videos, but maybe I will.
Yeah. Well, we could try some different food products, you know, spice it up.
We've got some avocados over there and some oranges and some pistachio nuts.
Yeah. Every day you have to find us something to and tie it into your work.
Next reel I'm going to make, we'll have some food in it, and
okay.
And it'll be, could be, you'll have inspired it.
Wonderful. What about, I had someone ask in my group right before this. So has there been any new research that or findings that have come out as of recently related to intergenerational, like specifically from like a DNA perspective? Because I know that there's, you know, a ton of studies with the mice or the rats, mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. I know about the Holocaust study, obviously. Mm-hmm. Have there been other studies that have been more so human? Like, has there been any recent human studies that have come out?
Well, it's hard to do humans because the generation span's so long. Like, why they use mice is they can replicate generations very quickly, and then you can, you know, review it within a year or two and it's meaningful. But with us, you know, we're waiting 20 years for a generation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
40 for two, three, you know. But, you know, there's another study called the Dutch winter. It was like, it was to do with World War II. It was a Dutch like winter famine. So basically in Second World War, like the Netherlands was cut off from food supplies really, really badly. And so obviously people that were there, you know, were malnourished, and mm-hmm. then, but it didn't stop them having kind of babies and stuff like that. So what they've been able to do since then is actually map like the physical needs of those offspring, right? So some are predisposed to not need that much food. So when they eat, they actually gain too much weight because their bodies in, you know, their epigenetic change mm-hmm. was that, okay, we can survive on very little food, so that when they actually went back to an abundant natural, like it is now, they actually gained weight more easily than an average person. But then their children, I think, were the opposite. So basically their epigenetic,
they lucked out. They got to be the thin one.
Yeah, yeah. So it can change. But what's also, you know, becoming more and more apparent is how important meditation is to help influence your the way that your brain processes emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And also how you can influence what markers are predisposed to kind of go off in your DNA and help kind of regulate those. So for me, when that separation occurred, those markers that came out were all these intense things in the stomach, helplessness. So if I'd have meditated for, you know, 5 or 6 years before that, you never do because you don't get to exactly. You're hurting. I would have been more prepared. Like it was probably like, yeah, if you want to leave, great. Have a nice day. See you later. And I would have been more had the capacity to deal with whatever came up. But as I said, you don't do it till
you have to. Yes.
Till after.
Are there any specific meditation techniques that you find particularly beneficial for all this stuff compared to others?
That's a good one. So the best one is just the original one, which is just following your breath. And it's the simplest one, but also the hardest. It's so hard to do. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you know, just pay attention to your breath as it goes in, pay attention to your breath as it goes out, and just wait for the thoughts to turn up and distract you, because that's what will happen. And then it's the ability to notice that your mind's gone wandering, and then you come back to following your breath, right? So what's good about this is it helps regulate your nervous system because you're breathing calmly. Mm-hmm. And then also it starts to really dismantle an overactive ego, because the ego wants to throw you off. And every time you bring yourself back just to that simple practice of observation, you're like having a win over your ego. And then the more that you can become aware of when thoughts just start running wild, well, then you're in a better capacity to actually like change it. So the better we can become aware of what's going on for us all the time, the better you can navigate. It's like having hands on the wheel of your car all the time, as opposed to just kind of like sticking your head out the window while you're driving and wait for the next thing to go wrong. So just that simple following of your breath is easy to do, but hard to master, kind of thing. But just in the effort that you spend to try to do that, it creates like benefits on lots of levels.
Mm-hmm. So talk about what type of work you do with people.
Yeah. My method's quite tried and tested at this point. And basically just what I've shared, I want people to, one of the mistakes I think we try too hard and is trying to take on our biggest traumas too quickly, because that's where the pain is, but we're not ready to deal with it yet. Mm-hmm. So what I help people like to start with is preparing people to heal before we actually try to heal. So that is developing like some of the questions that you've just asked about, you know, practices and things. We need a few tools in the toolkit, right? We need to know how to kind of bring ourselves back into calm states and regulated states without digging into trauma, because we can't do that before we start. Like once we start talking about this or that, you're going to get overwhelmed, and then we're not actually making any progress.
Yeah, that's the like prep step in EMDR too, right?
Yeah, for sure. And then I, so all the way through, I'm working somatically. So I'm constantly talking about the feeling states, because people, we need to become familiar with that. And it does take time for people to understand these messages that, you know, took me years to understand, right? You as well. And so, but then I want to go in and understand the psychology. So I work with like the IFS, like internal family systems, arts kind of approach. Mm-hmm. So we start there, because that's the basis of the limiting beliefs. That's the basis of the lens we see the world through. There's the dominant aspects of our personality that are trying to help us, but they're not anymore. So we need to, it's like taking apart a car. Like we need to see all the parts of the car before we work out what's actually not working, and then we put them all together again. And then we'll do the family constellations method, and we'll go through that really thoroughly. And, you know, applying the somatic release work as we go. And then, you know, people inevitably get like good outcomes, like they start to feel better. They start to, they become much more resilient and can handle things. But we need to make any breakthrough that they've had familiar, right? Because a lot of therapy, I did this too by mistake, like had a win in therapy and then quit therapy because I'm like, I've worked it out, I'm done. And then I had went backwards a little bit because I didn't bed it down. Like all the feelings that we want to have, we need to make it, kind of said it before, like we need to make them familiar. We need to make, it's like, imagine this, like imagine you got two pairs of shoes, your old comfortable slippers, right? And new shoes.
You got to break them in.
But it's really hard to give up that old pair, but that old pair is the one that you walked around in your trauma with.
Mm-hmm.
We need to move on from that. Mm-hmm. So we step into the new ones and they're like, I don't know if they're as comfortable and don't like this so much, but the old ones are really tempting. But you know, if you go back in them, you really don't want them anymore, but they're comfortable, they're familiar, right? And this is the last part, really important part. And you need time and support just to kind of hang in there until those new shoes, that familiar new sense of yourself is like vanilla and normal, right? We don't want it to be like a dopamine high and look at me, I'm like a healed person and I'll go fix the world, right? We actually want it to become normal, and now we've embodied it. Now you don't have to think yourself out of trouble. Your body's like doing it for you. You're healing on autopilot. And that's really profound. That's when you kind of really created a new version of yourself, and you live life. You're starting to write a new chapter for your own experience. Like, I'm driving this show now. I'm not just getting dicked around by trauma patterns. And when stuff does go wrong, you've got you can deal with it.
You got tools.
You're more resourced. You understand yourself, and you just move on. Like, what might have taken 8 years to heal now takes 3 or 4 days. You're back. You're good. Okay. We're moving through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
well, I expect to see a video now that includes a sneaker and a slipper. Okay. We had banana.
No, you're my social media manager.
Yeah. Love look it. At all these great ideas I have for you.
Now, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
I'll let you know if I think of anything else. Well, I will include all of your info in the show notes, and people are going to eat this shit up. So Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah. So if the Heal with Blair on Instagram is where, basically all my content is on there. If Instagram was to disappear tomorrow, I'd be in all sorts, but yeah, Heal with Blair.
Yeah, head on over there, guys. We got some prop work going on. So
yeah.
It's not your average video.
You're going to see some more videos and reels with fruit and shoes and them. What you holding on to? Just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.